like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
You're welcome along to Golf Weekly. We are back again. This time not a rooftop special. We're in studio. Nathan Murphy, hello to you.
How are you?
And no Fionn Davenport. Dave McIntyre, though.
Hi,
here
boys.
And ready. Good to have you with
us,
Dave.
Yeah, you looked great up on the roof last week.
It's very enjoyable.
Yeah.
Back in the studio now. It's warm. There's tea. The sound quality got a lot of compliments.
Almost week. Better than actually being in the studio.
Ronan Coughlin, great to hear you back, lads. Given the solid portable setup, I thought the sound quality was very good, said Ronan. And Jocelyn Bonau, who was worried about us as you two switch headphones, the rustling in the background. I'm glad to have you back, guys. Sound quality was 100%. I couldn't tell the difference from the studio.
Why were you apologising?
Damning.
Were you apologising mid-pod about why you...
Well, you don't know.
Thought the sound
there can be a little bit
be.
Of a breeze and... People opening and closing doors.
I could hear the traffic in my ears, but when I listened back to the podcast, you couldn't hear the traffic.
All right.
You know, so we were unsure of how it would come out. And I emphasised several times it was a rooftop special. Excited. And
yeah.
Mentioned it.
Like that was your first choice.
Yeah. So we'll talk to Shane Ryan on the podcast this afternoon. The President's Cup is starting this weekend. Starting today. Tomorrow.
Not today. It's a 4-day event.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
For God's sake.
Oh, you can't get too much of a good thing, Dave.
The President's Cup is in a little bit of trouble, it seems. I mean, it's not in any danger of going. It's on for the next number of years. It goes through until 2023. But the US have won 9 of the last 11 stagings, and there was one draw in there as well. So not so competitive. So we'll talk to Shane Ryan about that and about Donald Trump and golf's reaction to Trump, as it's what's been an amazingly interesting weekend or week in American sports. Your tweets at Golf Weekly NT. Derek Maher has been in touch. And was saying of Mark Rowe's hair, thanks for bringing this to my attention on the pod, hashtag scary. Dave, you've had your first glimpse of Mark Rowe's hair.
Yeah, maybe he just hasn't had time to make it to the barbers.
No.
No, as I mentioned last week, so the Irish Open was July.
Mm.
He arrived during the Pro-Am to wander around with Jose Mario Lathabel. And it was only then, up close, that I first noticed Mark Rowe's hair. And he was in full-on scarecrow mode.
Yeah.
What is it that he's trying to achieve?
Distract from the huge plane of baldness down the middle of his head, I think.
Despite
the
that
runway.
Bald patch having been visible to us all for 10 years now.
Yeah, and despite it being the whole top of his head.
But he seems to have several options still with what he can do with those side parts of his hair. So
yeah.
He can go with the scarecrow look, which he went with
wild.
Up in Port Stewart.
Yeah.
It's just flowing everywhere.
Yeah.
The sort of I'm just out of the shower look where it's maybe a little bit fuzzy. But then he seemed to have some sort of 1700s French style wavy.
I was just going to say that.
It's sort of a judge's
It's evolving. Wig. It's evolving. He's now put product in his hair. As you said at the Irish Open, it was almost like deliberately pushed out away from his head to make it look as distracting as possible. Now he's put product in his hair because it's got a bit thicker. And he's actually brushed it back behind his ears.
It is. It is like a judge's wig
yeah.
without the top bit.
Yeah. Crucially, at all times here, we have to emphasise there's no top bit. Anyway. Killian O'Congala. My first and last tweet ever.
O'Connella even.
Yeah.
Oh.
I sounded like an English broadcaster there.
He's from Connaught.
O'Congala.
Andy Moran.
Cillian O'Connor.
That's how Dave has to pronounce it on Sky.
Yeah.
For the natives.
Ken McGrath.
Oh dear. So his first and last tweet, only worth it for At Golf Weekly NT, waiting for the next pod on the Aran Islands, hashtag friend of the pod, and lovely picture of sunset in the Aran Islands.
Very nice.
Nice place to live, I'd say.
On another note, before you move on completely from Mark Rowe, good to see Rob Lee getting out of the office last
oh my
week.
God. Yeah, he was in the Sky cart.
He seemed to be loving it.
Yeah.
And he's brilliant.
I know.
He's so, like, and there's, even though Nick Doherty is, like, I like Nick Doherty, and maybe he's too close to some of the players at times. Like, Rob Lee interviewing Paul Casey on the Friday night was, he went for Casey. He was, you know, you're known here now as Mr. Thursday.
Mm.
Why?
Yeah.
And Casey was, no, really.
Yeah.
Why can't you get it done on a Sunday?
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just thought he was... He's underutilized.
Why totally has he agree. Fallen so far down the pecking order?
No, because 2-3 years ago, he was David Livingston's replacement, ultimately, and he was their main guy in studio most nights and was very good. Nice mix of humour on the less important nights. And and then good when he needed to be good. I don't know.
Maybe it's his personal circumstances and he doesn't want to be. Yeah, it, like, I don't think with Sky you can go, yeah, I'll go for 1 week. It's, we're going over here for the next 2 months.
Yeah.
You're either in or you're out.
Yeah. Philippe Timions said, thank God the pod was back. I was getting serious withdrawal symptoms. Hashtag friend of the pod. Thanks, Philippe. James West, lads, great to have you back. I've had to resort to Golf Digest. Oh. Reading.
I was searching for a golf podcast just for some listening during the week. And I got to say, most golf podcasts are inconsistent in their output.
Are they?
You know, some weeks they do it, some weeks they don't.
Yeah.
Golf.com have quite a few, Shipnook does quite a few, but they seem to have 7 or 8 different people who can do podcasts.
Yeah, we've got 4 and need 3 at all times.
So with the Shipnook stuff.
We're not the only ones.
It's un-Alan Shipnook-like, as we've discussed on the pod in the past.
How so?
Himself and some other veteran journalist basically licking each other's...
Wait.
For an hour.
Brian says...
telling each other how great they are.
But we're big Shipnook fans.
Oh, that's what I mean when I say it's un-Shipnook. Un-Shipnook-like. Yeah. He's just an incredible journalist.
Brian G, please confirm this week's pod will contain extensive coverage of the Hero Challenge at the British Masters featuring Gaz from Geordie Shore. Didn't see it. I know Lee Westwood won it. He beat Sergio. This is the nighttime thing they do on the Wednesday with...
It was the Tuesday. That was the problem. I was looking forward to watching it on Wednesday.
Who's the big presenter? The Yorkshire guy?
Vernon Kay?
Yeah, Vernon Kay does it with Kirsty Gallagher.
I watched... So they seem to do this 3 or 4 times a year.
Yeah.
Where did I watch it already this summer? And they had the fireworks. And Patrick Reed won it.
Wentworth?
Could have been Wentworth. And it was just very awkward.
Yeah. I didn't see it on Tuesday. Gaz from Geordie Shore.
Oof.
I went through a real phase of watching that tripe.
What?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How?
You watch an awful lot of tripe.
I know.
How
you're also
you
a big Love Island man.
Love Island I would stand over.
Oh,
Geordie Shore, I feel embarrassed.
Would you not at least try and pretend that you're watching it because there's only one TV in the house and your fiancé's forcing you to watch it?
No, I liked it.
When do you watch Geordie Shore?
I don't watch it anymore.
Okay.
But I would have watched it when it was on, like a Thursday night or something. Stick it on. Great crack. Just great fun. It's not very taxing TV, you know?
This is shed new light on
I probably watch too much TV as well. Watched Cold Feet last night. Dr. Foster the night before that. And that A Child Just in Time, that Benedict Cumberbatch drama on BBC on Sunday night was very good.
Right.
You can watch as much sport as you want. Mm-hmm. So when I get a rare opportunity, I'm like, I think I'll just watch the sport.
Yeah, I'd be the same. I don't watch sport.
What do you mean I can watch as much sport as I want?
As in, the reason why you're not watching that much sport is because
you're not
you
watching
can watch
Paw Patrol
as much
all day.
As you want.
No.
I watch more Peppa Pig and Paw Patrol than I do Premier League football.
Oh, I see. Sorry. So with the kids,
can watch so much of it.
Oh,
you can spend a lot of time not watching it.
Yeah, no. Okay, true. So anyway, Gaz from Geordie Shore we didn't see. And actually, your man from Love Island was there as well.
Anyone else?
We know who that
who
is.
From Love Island?
The one who goes out with Olivia. Chris.
We know
Chris,
who she is.
Chris and Olivia.
Were the people on Love Island famous?
Not before, but they're massive now.
Okay.
Like millions of followers now. If you don't know Chris and Olivia, your summer was wasted.
I can tell you need to know about the new character in Paw Patrol, though.
Rem, I'm sure.
Who?
There's another one starting
another
next week.
Another dog?
Yeah, another
no.
dog. Now they've added 3 new dogs.
What?
Yeah. So they added the dog
Rubble,
who goes up
Rocky, Marshall, Chase.
So they added this guy, Everest, who's a mountaineering dog.
Right.
Do you not have Everest?
Yeah, he wears a bit of green, doesn't he?
No, he's white. He's like a snow dog.
Right.
This is sad.
Then they added another female dog because they were getting so much stick for having...
Only Sky there.
Five male dogs. And now they're adding another female dog. So it's going to be a 5-3 split.
Good. Richard Scannell, long-time friend of the pod, tuning in from southern Sardinia.
Oh, wow.
Bastard. Not much golf, but fine food, beaches and scenery. Eat your heart out, Fionn Davenport, he says. Enda Kilgallen says, finding an unexpected at Golf Weekly NT podcast in your library last week. He has loads of the greater signs, the maths arrow things. Is greater than finding an unexpected tenor in last week's jeans. Hashtag rooftop. Patrick Cuddy then says, oh yeah, he was at Clean Castle, the Black Sunday Open comp. That's where they play off the back tees.
Like
in Clean Castle.
8,000 yards, is it?
As if Clean Castle's not long enough already. I think it's high, 7,000 something. It's right up there. Well and truly beaten up by the course today. 564 yard index 18 par 5.
So just index 18.
Hit a 300 yard drive and then you could get there in 2. You get there.
Oh, well, only on your Sunday if you hit your Sunday
best
twice.
Sorry,
off the screws for your first 2
shots. But you get there in 3. It's a par 5. I've never done it. I was in Killeencastle, obviously, for a few years, but worked Sunday, so couldn't. But I hear it's good. I hear it's good fun. Hashtag friends of the pod. The course looked good as well in the picture. And then finally, David Balbi back in touch. You're back. Happy days. Well done on the surname. The Italian guest was spot on. Balbi. But now he lives in North Yorkshire. Probably a sorry tale. And our competition winner, Mount Juliet, finally is Colm Casey. At Colm_Casey if you want to send him abuse. He's an international commerce and Chinese graduate, sports fanatic. All views are my own.
Wow. Well done. Get a four ball at Mount Juliet and you get to spend some time at the Paul McGinley Golf Academy. If you find out what the template is,
tell us.
Do let us know.
Yeah, if you see a book lying around saying template.
He has offered to help out, not Thomas Bjorn, Katrina Matthews, who is the next Solheim Cup captain. He said, I will share the template.
All right.
With Katrina Matthews.
Very good. So Colm Casey was delighted. I let him know about an hour ago on Twitter and he's thrilled. So get three of your mates or family members and go down and enjoy Mount Juliet. Before we get into the weekend's action, we got a huge reaction to the Mount Juliet competition. It's a very good prize. For golf lovers out there, we've got more golf to give away.
Yes. This week, with thanks to our new friends
okay.
in Charles Lynn Golf Club, we have four balls to give away to Charles Lynn Golf Club. They're celebrating 25 years in business.
Okay.
And Charles Lynn Golf Club is giving lucky listeners a chance to win a four ball in the beautiful surrounds of Greystones, County Wicklow.
Oh, very nice.
Enjoy a challenging test of golf on a 6,000 plus metre parkland course that scenically skirts the Irish Sea. It makes for a great golfing experience. I just made that up.
Did you? So fluent. So four balls. And for people to win, just tweet at GolfWeeklyNT. Do they have a Twitter handle?
They do, at CharlesLand_GC. That's CharlesLand_GC.
Okay. So tweet at GolfWeeklyNT, at CharlesLand_GC, and stick your name. And we'll pick our four winners who will get the four balls. Okay. We're talking Donald Trump and golf next. So an amazingly interesting week in US sports. Started off on Friday when Donald Trump told the NFL to fire those sons of bitches, NFL owners to fire those sons of bitches who kneeled during the anthem. That was at a rally in Alabama where he made an 83-minute speech. I mean, sometimes I think we meander on, but 83 minutes Donald Trump spoke for. Can you imagine? And in the midst of it all, he seemed to, in a very Donald Trump way, just pluck this topic up and go for it. And he was speaking to people who love that kind of talk. And there have been videos actually all week of American NFL fans burning the jerseys of players who protested. Anyway, the NFL responded. I'm sure you would have seen it on Sunday from Wembley Stadium on. There were owners involved, lots of owners who'd given Trump millions of dollars during his campaign, admittedly. But they either linked arms and then lots of players knelt as well. Some teams stayed in the dressing room. There was a certain elasticity, was the word I saw used in the New Yorker, to what various people were protesting. The Dolphins had Kaepernick jerseys, so he was at the forefront of their minds. Other players were just protesting their right to free speech. Others were saying Donald Trump, of all people, isn't going to push us around or intimidate us. And others were just probably supporting their teammates. So a real mixture, but still a very amazing thing to watch on Sunday. Pretty much unprecedented scenes in American sports. We saw one Oakland Raiders baseball player take a knee during an anthem as well. And presumably we'll see more of this going on in the NBA. Steph Curry, uninvited from the White House after himself saying, well, I'm not going. And Trump said, well, you're not invited anyway. That's the level of discourse going on publicly. And Trump, one other funny thing is that Trump and Greg Popovich just lost his mind at this. Trump tried to say that the players linking arms during the press conference or during the anthems were condemning those who were kneeling. And it was actually support for Trump, all the ones linking arms, which was what he said was going on. Popovich just said, I can't take any more. Yeah. This is just too much.
This is delusional, he said.
So you wouldn't ordinarily, I mean, I don't think the ice hockey podcast is having this discussion necessarily. They probably are to some extent. I don't think MLS podcasts are talking about this, but on a golf podcast, you have to, because Trump is so ensconced in the game. And the President's Cup is on this week in Liberty National in Jersey City. And the PGA Tour Commissioner, for instance, Jay Monahan, said on Tuesday that Trump would be attending most likely on Sunday. So Trump is a part of golf in a big, big way. So golf's response to the last week was always going to be of interest. And golf, it seems, is going to react exactly how we suspected golf would, is the short version.
By not reacting at all?
Hmm.
There will be no evidence, I would suggest, over the course of the weekend. But particularly, I assume on today's the first day of play. They do play the U.S. national anthem, and then followed by whatever cockamamie equivalent they've cobbled together for the rest of the world team.
I think it's Maniac.
They do play the national anthem, but the players aren't there when they play the national anthem. So it does avoid
that moment.
Anybody having to
take a knee,
which I'm sure
by everything we heard wasn't going to happen.
Lots of Tiger Woods won't take a knee because he's not sure he can get back up tweets this week.
Trump isn't the only president there. It is called the President's Cup, mm-hmm. and the Trump is the honorary chairman. So the president of the host country is always the honorary chairman. So Obama was the honorary chairman of the President's Cup 4 years ago when it was last in America. So Obama, Clinton, and Bush are all there this morning for the opening tee shots.
Wow.
And then Trump is going to rock up on Sunday. And if anything, we saw in, was it Bedminster, which he owns for the US Women's Open, he doesn't shy away from making sure he's got the best seat in the house for the final round. He was overlooking the 16th. He had a little, I presume, bulletproof setup behind the par 3 16th where one of the young Korean girls just absolutely collapsed under the pressure of having the president staring over her shoulder, hitting her tee shot. It's going to be interesting because I'm sure he's going to give interviews while he's there. Mm. He's going to thank golfers who know what it means to be a true American.
Yeah. We'll play you Tiger Woods talking about this and Davis Love III in just a moment. Jack Nicklaus was speaking to Golf Week and he was saying, I suppose everybody has a right to display their First Amendment rights. I don't think there's any squawk about that. Squawk. But I think there is a time and a place. I personally don't think half the fellows that are probably doing it understand what they're doing. Let me just read that line again. I personally don't think half the fellows that are probably doing it understand what they're doing. I would think they have an idea.
Well, on the evidence of what happened in the NFL at the weekend, I think if that's what Nicklaus is specifically referring to, he's right. Because the original protest, which was obviously Colin Kaepernick protesting against police brutality and inequality when it came to African Americans' treatment at the hands of the authorities and extrajudicial killings in some ways, that was completely lost over the course of the weekend. You listed in your intro about 5 minutes ago about five different reasons mm-hmm. why people may have been protesting as part of the NFL on Sunday. Mm-hmm. A lot of those guys have lost complete sight of what they're actually supposed to be protesting.
Yeah.
So on that, Nicklaus has actually hit the nail on the head.
I disagree, though. I think it's clear a lot of them were not supporting Kaepernick because they had a whole year to do it and never did. But post the Trump comments in Alabama, I think all of them, because it's not a complicated concept, all of them would have understood they were protesting their right to free speech and to protest. Like Trump is saying, if anyone protests or kneels during the anthem, you should fire that son of a bitch. So I think it's very simple concept for all the players on Sunday to say, well, whether I agree with Kaepernick or not, we have the right to free speech.
If they were all asked, if they were polled, there'd be some of them weren't quite sure what it was they were doing it for.
But do they all need to be behind the same one cause? As you're saying, not all of them are fully... If they wanted to support Kaepernick, they had a year to go
Kaepernick, they weren't
and
supporting.
Do it. Yeah. But they're standing up to Trump and everything Trump stands for. And what we've seen over the past, year, but last couple of months in particular, is that Trump stands for right-wing America, which that is what they're standing up for in a variety of different ways. There may be specific issues that upset different ones, but ultimately, that's what they're standing up for.
I would think in all the dressing rooms, someone stood up and said, Trump said we're son of a bitches if we take a knee and we should be fired. For Nicklaus to say this, I thought was a little bit...
Well, see, it just depends specifically what part of it he's referring to.
The Kaepernick
situation.
It sounds
like he's says it in a little bit of a condescending way, I'd
just
say.
Just a bit, yeah.
Well, you'd have to actually hear the tone of his voice, but I suspect he was almost virtually patting some lads on the head. You don't really know what you're doing, lads.
That's what I take from this. Anyway, I'll move on. I personally don't think half the fellows that are probably doing it understand what they're doing. I don't think that the sporting field is the right place. I know the president got involved. I wish he hadn't. I know some of the owners who probably felt one way had to support their players. So you get a very confusing answer as to what you've got. I personally have always felt like no matter where I went in the world, no matter where I played golf, whenever the national anthem was played for any country, I always stood and took my hat off and respected that anthem. And what it was and what it meant to the people that were there every time the national anthem is played, I get, and I have for 60 or 70 years, still get a chill up and down my spine every time it's played. I think it supports and honours the meaning of people who've given their lives, who've given their time and effort to our country, and they need to be respected for that. It's a difficult question you're asking me here. Everyone who answers that question cannot answer it properly. They don't want to disrespect the rights of the kids and you don't disrespect our country. So how do you answer it? Okay, fair enough. He pulls it back at the end.
Forwarded an answer. Like, I heard Tom Brady been questioned about it on Sunday night. It was just embarrassing.
What did Brady say?
Just completely abdicated all responsibility. Said, I'm not going to get into that kind of stuff. Okay. I'm not here to talk about that. So at least Jack Nicklaus, when he was asked the question, was willing to come up with some kind of a thoughtful answer on it. Because a lot of people are just bailing on it.
Yeah. I'll play Woods and Davis Love the Third, will I? Okay, so Tiger Woods followed by Davis Love the Third talking about this issue.
Obviously, there's a lot of unrest right now, whether it's political or racial in this country right now. And that's something that's obviously happened before in the past, and it's happening right now in America right now. So hopefully things can be healed. We can progress as a nation and come together, not just only in the near future, but for perpetuity.
Yesterday, you kind of talked on this same vein in regards to when protests seem to be appropriate or not, and you indicated that not during the national anthem. Is there a time where it's appropriate for a golfer during a tour event to make some kind of position or take some kind of position in regards to some of the issues that are out there today?
During a golf tournament? Well, fortunately, we get to represent our country Ryder Cup and this week at the President's Cup, so that's the only time we really play the national anthem, you know. But yeah, the country was founded on the Constitution and the Bible, and you should respect, you know, and as I said, I think in one interview, in NASCAR they have a prayer and then they have the national anthem. Respect those things and then respect the people that fought for the right that we can protest the rest of the time. So I don't know about during a golf tournament.
It's gibberish from Davis Love, really, isn't it?
He's just backing up what he said in his interview on, was it Good Morning America, earlier in the week about the Bible and about, actually, we need to go further into this. We need to look at NASCAR and we need to have a prayer in advance.
There is a healthily attended prayer group on the PGA Tour. It's fine if they're right, but...
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
No.
Like, Tiger is obviously in a difficult position this week in that he knew this question was coming. I do wonder how much of that was Tiger's thoughts and how much was, all right, what is the answer that gets me through this week with the least amount of hassle.
He did a piece with Shane O'Donoghue a while back and was asked about Trump. When it's fair to say Trump was, if you think Trump is a racist in some way, Trump was every bit as racist and clearly racist a couple of months ago when he did it. And he gave the same answer, oh, I just hope everybody can come together and hug each other in love and care bears or whatever. So, you know, he's not taking really a position on it beyond let's all just be friends.
He's just trying to negotiate each question on a question-by-question basis.
Yeah, and say nothing that's going to...
He's going through the process.
...put himself forward. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens on Sunday.
He's not going to put himself forward as a voice on this, Tiger. Like that. His answer there is saying, I'm checking out of this conversation. I'm not a part of it, really. I don't want to say anything.
Yeah. Republicans can like golf, too. It's fine.
Yeah.
It should be the other way around. It should be Democrats can like golf too.
Yeah.
Just they can't afford to play it.
Yeah.
Generally. I would assume that Tiger is talking to people in the President's Cup saying, I don't want to be in a situation on Sunday where I'm standing next to Donald Trump and I've got a big old smile on my face, because that is what Donald Trump will want.
Mm.
Hey, this guy's my best mate.
Mm.
The most famous sports person in the world.
Mm. Tiger has been very disappointing in this whole area, though, no?
That's like the greatest understatement of modern sports. He's been a professional for 21 years and he has done absolutely nothing to try and improve race relations in the States, aside from being the first successful black golfer.
Mm.
So his mere existence and his ability to win tournaments, that's pretty much all that he's done.
Yeah. Even that hasn't helped.
No, he hasn't blazed a trail for up-and-coming young black kids that want to play golf. Has he blazed a trail for them?
Is he asking questions? Is he putting the pressure on the PGA Tour? Is he putting pressure on Augusta? Certainly not publicly.
Never publicly, no. I can't remember a single public comment. I mean, he wrote in his book, the most recent one, a little bit about some of the stuff which happened to him as a kid, stones through the windows at one point and a bit of bullying. But I think that's about it, really.
Yeah.
You could flip the question and ask, what is it that we would have expected or hoped from him over the last 21 years?
I think for him to talk publicly, he's clearly a smart enough guy. So for him, amidst all the Kaepernick stuff, even this week, in that press conference, he doesn't have to call the president a buffoon, but he could add his voice to LeBron and Kaepernick and simply say there, I do think we have a problem in this country. I do think there's inequality. I do think African Americans are on the wrong side of that issue. And we really need to look at it. And I do think the police killings need to be looked at. And just almost highlight some of the stuff which has been highlighted. He doesn't have to say Trump is an asshole. He doesn't have to say he's a fool. But he could say, I watch the news, I'm an adult. For what it's worth, my opinion is we have a big, big problem here. As opposed to whatever, I can't even remember what he said. It's that forgettable. I hope we all move on together and there's peace and healing. And
our nation can be great once again.
And rainbows.
Yeah, it is difficult when you listen to Davis Love, and obviously we love our golf. We're doing a golf podcast. Yeah. And you know that Davis Love's thoughts are replicated by the vast majority of players playing in the President's Cup and the vast majority of professional golfers. And it's so at odds with my beliefs of most people over here's beliefs, I would imagine, and most people that you would have common ground with in America. It is such a white, privileged sport still.
Conservative,
Republican. There's this guy, Peter Malnati, who actually Shipnuck has done an interview with on his podcast. I was listening to it earlier on, and boy, this guy can talk. I say he spoke to him for half an hour. I think Shipnuck might have asked two questions during the entire thing. So he's world number 640.
Okay.
He won on the PGA Tour last year. Last November, he won the Sanderson's Farms Open. Okay. He's one of the web.com as well. But he has they're all well educated, but he has a degree in communication. So he wrote an article basically. And he said, I'm kind of writing this thinking, I'm 640th in the world.
Who cares?
Who's really going to care? I know it'll probably get a little bit of traction, but who's really going to care? And instantly, I think it was retweeted by five or six serious golf writers, and he knew, all right, there's going to be a bit of a backlash about this. He wasn't even asking anything hard. He's saying, so when players take a knee during the national anthem and the gut reaction of so many people, it's called them a son of a bitch. I ask you, what do you stand for? As for me, I stand for freedom. I stand for justice for all. I stand for equality, for empathy, and for compassion. Talks about taking the knee and what the anthem means and respecting the anthem. And in America, we fought for the right for people to be able to protest. And he seems like an absolute outlier in golf. As he said, he wouldn't name names. He said, I better not name. There's definitely a couple of other people on the tour who, you know, are a bit like me. And he said, I don't see myself as overly politicized. I didn't grow up in a left-leaning household. We didn't really talk about politics at all. Yeah. But he said he was over at another player's house, and I don't know what the comment was, but the player's father said, are you a liberal or something? He said in the most condescending, as if this was the worst thing.
Did you fart?
Yeah. So now he said the reason he wrote it was because it's easy to be in the middle, and that, all right, I'm not Rory or I'm not Ricky Fowler. It's a bit easier when you're 640th in the world to take some sort of a stand. But we are at a moment in time where we don't know what we're going to be looking back on in 2 years. We're not. We don't know how we're going to be looking back on Davis Love's comments, on Tiger sitting there, on Rory playing golf with Trump. You would just hope one of them would come out and say something.
No, not going to happen. Like Davis Love's other comments on that Good Morning America interview, I think you'll see that in golf, there's a little bit more restraint. We adhere to the rule book and to our core values and to our traditions. And I think that's why our sport is so successful. And like, you think, what are the traditions in golf? Black caddies, white players at the Masters, no black members at Augusta for how long?
Those traditions can be connected either indirectly or directly to the very reasons behind Colin Kaepernick's protest.
Yeah. Some of the traditions are great. Self-policing, a certain decorum, manners, all that stuff is very good too. And I know that's what Davis Love ultimately is talking about, but a lot of the traditions in golf are also,
it's a blindness
awful
to the elitism, to the discrimination, elitism, to the inequalities, to the restrictions.
Yeah.
Is he dumb enough to be utterly blind to that? I'm sure he's not.
I can't think you're walking around on the PGA Tour thinking, everyone here is white.
This is all inclusive.
But if that's what you've grown up with, if that's what your entire life has been, it is something of an echo chamber. But is that not republicanism? Is that not a huge amount of it of, oh, we're all self-made men? Yeah, my daddy was a rich guy, but we're all self-made men.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really terrible, golf. Well, it's just him.
We need to put that in the intro. Yeah, it's really terrible golf.
It is an embarrassment, though, isn't it, for the sport? You have to say, and it's so difficult because nobody at the top level there, in broadcasting as well, can really make a stand. You're not going to see it on the golf channel.
No.
Somebody saying, this is really poor. We need to think about the values that we're,
but that will never change
supporting
either, because we'll probably never see a black broadcaster, like, it's certainly anchoring a major golf broadcast. Now, ESPN have a couple of reporters who are African-American, and you'll see it here and there, but you won't see like somebody in the Jim Nantz role. You won't see somebody in the Nick Faldo role for a long time. Unless it's Tiger, but we've just talked about how we feel that Tiger hasn't really done enough in that regard over the last 21 years. We could sit here in 50 years' time and we'll still be talking about golf in the exact same terms.
The other side is that everything we know about Trump is that his opinions are flaky at the best of times.
Yeah.
You do think if Tiger Woods spoke personally to Donald Trump, and I know Tiger's foundation tweeted when in the last couple of weeks they were changing the immigration laws and about the Dreamers and all that, and Tiger's, now whether that, I presume that's somebody within Tiger's foundation has decided this is the way to go. You do actually sense that Donald Trump is so easily influenced that if somebody of Tiger Woods' stature did speak to him, that he would listen.
Totally, I think that's true. Barack Obama met with Trump, obviously, and came out of the meeting and did a press conference afterwards, and he was saying Trump is not an ideologue. He doesn't have some kind of well-thought-out ideology. He just kind of reacts, and it's sort of a pragmatist and sort of goes with his gut and things. But he doesn't intellectually thought things out. So I agree with you. But he'll be there on Sunday.
Yeah.
He'll be very visible. And golf will pretty much put their arms around him and say,
Welcome in, Donald.
You're
will it be a contest by the time he gets there?
The President's Cup itself?
Yeah.
No.
Is he going to give this is reflective of the way the world is going right now.
America beats the world. Yeah. I mean, it's a perfect story for Trump, isn't it?
America is great again.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk a bit more about the President's Cup. We'll talk to Shane Ryan as well. And Lee Westwood's tournament in Newcastle continues. So, delighted to say, Shane Ryan, slaying the tiger a year inside the ropes on the new PGA Tour. You know his book is on the line, and he's just told me before we hit record he's got a baby due in a couple of weeks. Shane, hello.
Hey, how's it going, Joe?
Exciting times.
Yes, indeed. It's exciting, busy times. I don't know if you're a father or not, but
nope.
I'm sort of nervous, and I've heard it's sort of like war where you don't know how you're going to do until you're in the thick of it. So hopefully I'm ready for it.
Well, I've seen the guys in here who have had children, and they've aged rapidly, so there is that.
Oh, good. Thank you so much.
No, it's cool. Well, look, we hope it goes well. Congratulations. That's great news.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
So we've just been talking Trump and summing up an amazing week from Alabama speech, all 83 minutes of it, into an extraordinary day in the NFL. We saw an Oakland A baseball player take a knee as well. And then I guess it was golf's turn to react to Trump. And golf has a special relationship with Donald Trump. We've played the listeners, Tiger Woods, frankly, I don't know, talking about love and peace and rainbows, and really just in essence saying, I don't want to be dragged into this in any meaningful way. We've played Davis Love III talking about how golf has a bit more restraint than other sports. And we've had Jack Nicklaus talking as well, saying at one point he's not sure if half the players understood what they were protesting about. So golf is, as expected, not leading the line here in terms of condemning really anything about Trump. There's no golfers, bar the guy ranked 600 in the world who's written a good piece. There's nobody sticking their head up and saying, yeah, you know what, maybe this country needs to look at itself.
Yeah, and you know, you wouldn't expect them to. I mean, I laughed when I saw that Stricker and Davis Love were saying that they wouldn't protest the anthem. And it's like, oh, really? You know, a group of rich, conservative, white Americans, basically all of whom voted for Trump and who probably agree with every single thing he's done. I had heard, and this is complete hearsay or whatever, but I had heard from a friend who would know this kind of thing, that the only golfer who voted against Trump, who voted for Hillary Clinton, was Phil Mickelson. And otherwise, as far as they knew, and they knew hundreds of golfers, all of them had voted for Trump. That's who these people are. That's what they believe. There's no way they're ever going to take a protest on behalf of either racial justice, which was what originally Colin Kaepernick intended, or this more vague, broad unity kind of thing that the NFL has co-opted and tried to deprive of any specifics. They're not going to do either one of those things, because they are Trump's rich base. You know, not to get too deep into the weeds of politics, but he just came out with a tax reform plan yesterday that would save guys like this millions of dollars. That's all they care about. And, you know, on the social issues, they're completely with him. So, yeah, it made me laugh to be like, oh, yeah, they're not. It's like the Vichy regime in France. We're not going to protest the Nazis. Oh, really? Good, because you're their number one base. So yeah. It's really no surprise.
The Golf Channel and various other outlets have been doing their coverage from the Golf Hall of Fame Awards and from the President's Cup, obviously, this week. Is there anybody in the media? You know, we see these great things in the media, NFL media shows where different contributors make points and they go viral. Are there any people in from a broadcasting point of view who are making some points about golf's relationship with Trump, or are they equally maybe supportive of Trump, or certainly feel a bit restricted?
Yeah, I think either supportive or restricted is probably true. I'm going to say the first thing. I may have missed something, but I don't think I would have. I think if an American had said something like that, I think I would have come across it. The big thing, again, you have to remember is that not only are the pro golfers Trump supporters and conservative Republicans in America, but by and large, the fans of golf and golfers in America probably fit into that demographic too.
Yeah,
it's not 100%. There are people like me. There are, I'm sure, many middle and lower middle class people in America who golf, minorities who golf that are more on the left side of the spectrum. But predominantly, it's old white people that are into golf, quite honestly, in America, and that's a conservative demographic. Mm. And it costs money to golf too, so most of them have money. You know, most of them are going to be middle class at best, and upper middle class probably for the most part. It's in a way that it's not in Europe, probably, or Australia or other parts of the world. It is very much a wealthy person's game here and a white person's game, and. Mm. Those two elements mean, you're likely going to be conservative. So, point being, even if you're a broadcaster on the Golf Channel who would like to say something, the last thing you want to do is say something and then open up the floodgates to complaints and possibly, jeopardize your own job.
Yeah. So Nicholas, to be fair, by the way, did say, I wish the president hadn't said anything in Alabama and started this. I mean, it's I never expected really golf to get behind the Black Lives Matter campaign somehow and the Kaepernick situation. That was never quite going to happen. I did have maybe half an inkling that at least one of them might come out and say, well, Trump attacked the right to free speech and the right to peaceful protest on Friday in Alabama, and while I respect the anthem and I'll always stand for the anthem, I think Trump's comments were dangerous for American society, really dangerous. You know, fire those sons of bitches if they're going to kneel during the anthem. A peaceful protest. That's what Kaepernick has been doing from day one. Very peaceful, very eloquent. I did have half a hope that somebody across the whole week would say, well, I'm going to respect the anthem, but I think that free speech cannot be put in any jeopardy whatsoever. And the president did that. And that's a really dangerous thing. But having listened to you talk for the last 2 minutes, I now feel very naive for thinking that.
Well, it's not naive. It's logical to think that. But the thing you have to remember is that Trump supporters in America and conservatives in America are big supporters of the First Amendment as long as people are saying something that they believe in. Huh. And the minute they say something different, they're not up for it. So, look, you see the protests, the riots in Ferguson, right, in St. Louis after the police violence there. And they'll say something like, I wish, that's the protest is fine, but I wish they would do it in a peaceful manner. Mm. OK, so then you get Colin Kaepernick doing it in a peaceful manner, like you just said, or the other NFL players, they're kneeling. And then they say, I wish they wouldn't disrespect the troops, a protest that has nothing to do with the troops. I wish they would do it privately. I wish they would, give their own money to causes instead of doing something so publicly, which, by the way, Kaepernick does at a very high volume lately. And so you see a kind of pattern emerging, which is that nothing is right. There's no way for someone who disagrees with them to protest in a way that they will find palatable. They will not defend their free speech because they don't believe in free speech. They believe in speech that conforms to what they believe. And there's no way that that thing you said, which is completely true, and which, by the way, we've seen a lot of veterans say, which is that I'm always going to stand for the national anthem. I fought for it, but also part of what I fought for is the right for people like this to kneel and to protest. That's not something that like a true Trump supporter would ever say because they just don't agree with it.
There is no doubt in American society, black people, African Americans are on the wrong side of this inequality issue. golf and country club culture is pretty much the poster boy sport of elitism. And so Tiger Woods, that brings us to Tiger Woods in the midst of all of this debate. An icon, the greatest icon in the history of the game, is African-American or is African-Asian.
That's right.
This really, it's so fascinating. He's more fascinating than LeBron James. He's more fascinating than Kaepernick in many ways, because he is in this bubble. He is surrounded by this conservative elite, the Trump supporters. We're into the realm of speculation here quite clearly. What is he thinking? Like, what is he really thinking? The guy who is surrounded by it all, who must know what arguably a sizable percentage of golfing fans think of African Americans in across society. And he won't lend his voice in any way whatsoever to this discussion that's ongoing of late, particularly about the treatment of black people, the treatment, the inequality in society. I just look at him and I'm just so desperate to know, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm with you. And it's hard to speculate, you know, it's hard to speculate to say, to put yourself in his shoes and say, is this something, my instinct is that this is something that he just doesn't want to deal with, that he probably, frankly, doesn't think about a lot. I would hazard a guess. But again, that is just a guess.
The reason I think your guess may be onto something, and please continue your point, is I think if you were him and you did think about it a lot, you'd be far more inclined to have said something over the last 20 years. I mean,
and that's exactly right. I don't think Tiger's a coward, or I don't think he's a quiet person or afraid to state his opinion. I think if he wanted to, he would have. Mm. And I don't think he wants to. And all I can say is, look, there was a famous quote by Michael Jordan, and this was at a far less political time in American history, 20 years ago, where they asked him why he never took a political stance. And he said something like, Republicans buy, basketball shoes too. Yeah. Republicans shop Nike too. I tend to respect players more like LeBron James or Steph Curry, who in one way or another speak their mind. And I have the utmost respect for Colin Kaepernick. Again, we're in a far more political time right now. I don't think the stick to sports thing applies in America anymore. I think everything is hyper political, and that almost by not taking a stance, you are taking a stance. Mm. And so you always hesitate with someone like Tiger Woods to say something like, he needs to be saying something here, because look, he's lived this struggle, and undoubtedly he's experienced racism in ways that I'll never know, that you'll never know.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to say to a black man, this is your duty to speak up on racial issues.
Yeah.
But I do have a lot of respect for someone like Colin Kaepernick. And again, by not saying anything, Tiger Woods is saying something. That's just the reality of life today. And it's not fair necessarily. And it puts him in a tough position because he obviously doesn't want to say anything. But again, your silence also speaks volumes, especially in a sport like golf, like you pointed out. So I don't think you can escape that reality.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, they're all well-made points. And again, he's hard to get a handle on, because on the one hand, you think what you hear about him or the books you read about him, he seems to stay inside a lot and play video games, and it's fairly vacuous stuff, to be honest. He's not exactly doubling down on reading history books or engaged with what's on CNN or Fox News that day. He doesn't seem to be wired that way. But then equally, you hear he's often an insomniac and he's a voracious reader, and he'll read books on engineering and science and all of these various subjects. So you would presume at some stage over the last 20 years he's read books about American society. And as you said, it's not for us to lecture a black man in America about how he wants to handle this topic. I guess it's just fascinating. We'll never know for sure unless he just speaks frankly about his views and things, which is not happening so far. Is it part of his overall preference for privacy, I wonder?
Yeah, I think there's that too. I think he knows that by speaking out, I mean, he's going to invite, he's going to put himself right in the midst of this very angry and this very sort of incendiary debate.
Yeah.
And he's going to be doing it in a sport where 95% of people are going to disagree with him, of the fans and the other players are going to immediately disagree with him. You have people in golf like Grayson Murray, who won an event this year, who goes on Twitter and says just overtly racist things all the time. And he's excused, basically. You know, I mean, nobody, there's no punishment for it. He's done things on Twitter that would get him suspended in a different sports league, and it doesn't happen in golf. And again, part of that is he's a pretty low profile guy at this point in his career. But you know, this is a new thing. I mean, this would be even worse for Tiger to speak out in terms of the reaction than it would be if he were in basketball or if he were in the NFL or something like that.
Yeah.
And getting back to your point of, you know, this vacuous existence that he lives, maybe, or you know, maybe when he reads, he likes to read about architecture, engineering, or, you know, the military or something like that. Like, he loved to train with the SEALs.
Yeah.
You know, you wish you lived in a place and time where it was just his right to do that, you know, and it wasn't like he didn't have to. Like, not everybody is going to be a political activist. But again, it just gets back to the point of, like, here we are stuck in the midst of the most hyper political period in American life since at least the 60s when the civil rights movement in Vietnam were happening. And we're all thrust into it, and nobody's safe. You know, everybody's under the microscope.
Yeah. We'll move off Tiger, I guess. You know, as you said, he's not obliged to do this. He's a private citizen. It is just a pity that the one guy, the one African-Asian guy who happened to be maybe the greatest golfer of all time, was not wired that way. I mean, that would have been really interesting to see if he was a Kaepernick-type person. Would have been really interesting. So the President's Cup then, pretty much owned by Team USA over the last number of years. And I don't know. I mean, certainly in little old Europe, we don't really care too much about this. It doesn't really get our juices flowing. How much trouble is this tournament in? It's a PGA Tour run thing. They will stand to make a lot of money off this if they can ever get it to anything close to the Ryder Cup in terms of interest and TV rights and all that kind of stuff. And they're trying desperately, and it's set to continue for the next number of years. But I mean, how is this feud? Is this a big deal for the players, first of all?
Well, you know, it's not as big as the Ryder Cup, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And the truth is that, yeah, the American dominance since this has started makes it less of a big deal, I think. In order for this tournament to succeed, I mean, there's a lot of things that have to happen, but the number one thing that has to happen is the international team has to actually win.
Mm.
And, you know, just the way it works is that they don't, because their players are not as good, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really kind of that simple. You saw, you know, every American on the roster is inside the top 30 of the world, where only six from the European roster are in the top 30, or sorry, from the international team are in the top 30. And so there's a big imbalance there, and it's even bigger than the Ryder Cup. And from what I can tell, there's a problem. The Ryder Cup, the European captains have been so smart, and they've instituted their system, you know, starting in the Seve and Nick Faldo era. And they've really got something going, and they're really good at sort of overcoming a minor deficit in player rankings and skill or whatever. Usually, again, the Americans are the favored team in the Ryder Cup, and they never win, even though they did last time, of course. But there's a bigger problem in the international side, which is they don't have a template or a system like that. I think there's a language barrier when you have sort of like Asian and South or South Korean, Japanese golfers who are, you know, maybe they're not like fluent English speakers, and they're, you know, I just don't think there's the same camaraderie that there is on Team Europe. And so there's a lot of obstacles to them winning. Yeah. And I would be shocked. I would be absolutely shocked if they win on American soil this year. And so, yeah, to me, it's a little bit of a dud. I mean, to be totally honest, I make it my goal every 2 years, even when I'm not covering golf full time, to actually get to the Ryder Cup live, because I think it's so great. If I didn't get to the Ryder Cup, I would be absolutely glued to the television. I don't think I'll watch much of the President's Cup this week. I'll watch football. I'll go play tennis outside. Unless it's close at the end, I really don't care.
Okay, and that kind of sums it up, really. Players are trying to talk it up. Everyone's saying it's a big deal. I guess it continues. They hope somehow it captures the imagination. The real death knell will be if some of the top players withdraw and say, look, I'm going to take a break, I'm injured, or do a Paul Casey or whatever. Once you've got a strong American team, it'll kind of keep chugging along for the next couple of years.
Yeah, no, and that's, you're absolutely right. As long as, and that goes for the international team too, as long as players like Adam Scott and Jason Day are playing, and like you said, as long as, yeah, the minute the top American players go not interested, you can forget it. You might as well just bury it. But as long as they're playing, you know, I mean, it's, why not? You know, I think it's got the sponsorship money. I think it's going to persist. Look, if you look at the Ryder Cup in the early years, America never lost then either. Mm. Back when it was just against Great Britain at first and then Great Britain and Ireland, it was an insanely successful streak. I think in something like 50 years, the Americans lost twice.
And then Jack Nicklaus then said, you know what, let's broaden this to Europe. That was one of his ideas. I mean,
yeah.
Who are the rest of the world going to get?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's... Is there, like, if we colonize Mars, will we discover
something
golfers
like that, yeah.
there?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I always wondered, because it's funny, because you've got sort of a one-sided thing. It's America versus Europe, and then America versus the international. I always wonder, why isn't Europe play the international at some point? Where's the other half of
it's
that?
It's a good point. We do play Asia. There's a Eurasia tournament, which is...
Oh, okay.
Oh, you're into it. You're into it as much as we are. Yeah, it's, it's not exactly caught the imagination. And actually, the Eurasia Ryder Cup-esque thing, the big players all miss that. The European players miss that. It's seen almost as a chance to give potential future Ryder Cup players, young players... an experience of what
sure,
it's like. So,
sure.
I mean, that's how low-key it all is.
Got it.
There
got
you go.
It.
There you go. So you can watch the Eurasia Cup. We'll get you back on when it's on next. You can watch it for us.
That sounds good. No, okay. I'll be happy to be your American correspondent for the Eurasia Cup.
Listen, always good to have you on. Shane Ryan, Slaying the Tiger is the book that we always recommend here. Lots of our listeners have got it and like it. A Year Inside the Ropes on the new PGA Tour. Thanks as ever, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Joe, have a good one. Thank you very much.
So good to have Shane Ryan on there talking President's Cup and Donald Trump. And on the President's Cup front, so Steve Stricker versus Nick Price. As we said there with Shane, it's been a fairly one-sided affair. 11 stagings, the USA have won 9. Phil Mickelson was asked if he thinks it'd be good for, what are the global team called? Team World.
Team.
International team. Team World.
Team World.
Good if the international team...
It should be
team,
called Team World.
If the international team were to win one, even Phil Mickelson was saying, no, we're not quite there yet. But even that's a concession. We're getting close to it, though.
We were there with the Ryder Cup before Valhalla in 2008.
Yeah.
We really felt the Americans were just going to start to lose interest in if they didn't win one.
Yeah, but I don't think the comparisons between the two are fair at all, because people were interested in the... So people started maybe at a very high level with the Ryder Cup, and there was a concern that maybe people may be losing interest.
Yeah.
The problem for the President's Cup is nobody cares to start with.
No.
Mm. So...
There was a fear, though.
Where do you
Europe
go from there?
So dominant. Well, look, it's a team that... I was going to say it's a team that are from a whole host of different countries, but obviously you could say that about the European team as well. But at least there does seem to be some kind of a binding.
We're all European,
there.
Aren't we?
Yeah, like it's tenuous, but it seems to
I
work.
I think from a golf point of view, they have a hell of a lot more in common. The European Tour, they all started out playing in the South Africa Open and been over there for three weeks and been here for 3 weeks. And
they're all from the same continent.
Together.
Where you've got like a South American and Johnny Vegas, you've got a South African, an Australian, a Korean, a Japanese golfer.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Adam Hadwin has in common with Anirban Lahiri.
The headline names on the international team are really good. Matsuyama, Jason Day, Adam Scott, Louis Westhuizen, okay, Mark Leishman, Charles Schwartzel, Brendan Grace, Siwoo Kim, Johnny Vegas, Adam Hadwin, down we go. Like, there's some really good players there. It's just the American team is damn strong.
Well, the American team are going to be a strong favourites for the Ryder Cup next year, as they are for this, probably.
Even in Paris?
Look at that team. Like, this is one of the great American teams. DJ, Spieth, Thomas, Fowler, Berger, Koepka, Reed, Kucher, Phil.
Mm.
And Phil hasn't done much.
Sure.
Played every single President's Cup. He had that great line. Did you ever see the little clip where he's like, we gave them a two-hole lead. Still, they couldn't beat us.
I'll be watching it. I'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah, if it gets... It's like anything. If it turns out to be a dramatic finale on Sunday night... Well, I'll be watching it on Sunday to see what Trump does.
True.
Is it New Jersey it's been played in?
Yeah.
Overlooking National.
Overlooking... I mean, the course itself is not really seen as a great course or a favourite amongst the tour pros. But from a TV point of view, pretty much every hole will have a view of the Manhattan skyline or the Statue of Liberty. So it will work well in that respect. It'll be very American.
Well, at least it being on the East Coast, the time difference won't be as penal as it can be when you're trying to stay up and watch golf on a Sunday night. But
Shots
it will also need it to be very tight to
have a thought as I'm, whether I'm going to watch it or not.
Fair enough. Meanwhile, the British Masters continues. Lee Westwood's the host this time around. Alvaro Quiroz off to a good start, 6-under today. Paul Dunne was going well last time I checked. He was 5-under.
Yeah, he's having a great season. I was saying, what did I say outside? 700 grand.
Yeah,
he's won already this year, which is quite a season. He's 32nd in the Race to Dubai rankings, so he's definitely going to end up at the DP World Championship at the end of the year.
Big improvement on fighting for his card last year.
Alvaro Quiroz, I was just again flicking through to go, what the hell happened to Alvaro Quiroz since Jennifer Aniston asked him out on a date and he said, you're grand, thanks.
When?
Did you not tell me this story?
No.
We talked about this in the pod, didn't we, about a year ago?
God.
Yeah. That's, somebody else. Yeah. So when he was at his peak, so probably what? 2009, 2010.
Yeah, a good while ago now.
Jennifer Aniston must have been sitting at home on television watching the golf and said, whew, that guy.
Wow.
All 6'4" of them, bombing the ball 320 yards. I wonder next time he's in town, or maybe next time I'm in Spain, maybe we could just go for a coffee or a bit of dinner.
Nice.
I don't know why she has this funny accent all of a sudden.
Kind of sleazy.
And I don't think it happened. I think Quiroz said, you're grand. But the only reason he's basically still playing golf, he won earlier in the year, he won the Sicily Open, so he's got his exemptions and all that. He won the DP World Tour Championship back in 2011.
Yeah.
He got a 5-year exemption for that. He did absolutely nothing in those 5 years. Mm. His game just collapsed completely, couldn't drive the ball anywhere near a fairway, was playing the Challenge Tour at the start of this year, managed to get an invite to this Sicily Open in April or May, won that, and now he seems to be back.
Wow. Interesting. Maybe he needs the pressure. So, Quiroz lead. Roy McIlroy, 3-under was his round. He's finished it. He had the fans helping him find his ball on the 17th after a wayward drive. So, 3-under is perfectly good start. It's a £3 million event, this British Masters, Lee Westwood in Newcastle. And we have a clip here of Rory in his press conference basically saying why he was there.
I want to play the Ryder Cup next year. So obviously got to play my 5 events in Europe. So that was a big decision into that. And yeah, that's really, you know, obviously there's, you know, there's minimums and stuff like that. And I've sort of been quite close to the edge on minimums and stuff the last few years, and didn't really want to put European Tour in another sticky position. So thought, yeah, I'll play an extra one and sort of not have to make the hard decision and have to answer to the membership about why I didn't play the minimum when I could have and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, want to play the Ryder Cup next year.
Because he had to be, basically.
Yeah, earlier in his press conference, he talks about how Lee Westwood originally asked him to play in this event at Sergio Garcia's wedding, and McIlroy was like, I'm not going to play. I hope to be in the Tour Championship, and then I'm obviously playing in the Dunhill Links Championship with my dad the week after the British Masters. So I'm sorry, Lee, that will not be on my schedule. Then things went obviously a little different than he would have anticipated. And he does say, you know, I'm delighted to be here. And then that answer you've just heard comes about 2 questions later, where it's clearly he's not in a position where he's delighted to be there. He's just there to tick a box and to make sure that he doesn't make himself ineligible for the Ryder Cup in 2018.
Mm.
As he said himself, he would have put the European Tour in a very, very awkward situation because they would have had to make an exception to the rules.
Again.
Again, for this, what, 2 out of 3 years?
Yeah.
2 years ago now when he won the Race to Dubai and he didn't play the required number of tournaments, but they gave him a bye.
Yeah.
Which, like, if you're Danny Willett back then and you come second, you're probably still a little bit peeved about. Cost you £1 million at least.
Yeah.
He put himself in this situation. I don't know how he didn't realise this when, like, it's 6 weeks probably since he said, I'm going to play the FedEx, I'm going to play the Dunhill, and that's it. He must have known during those 6 weeks that he had to find another tournament somewhere.
Or maybe he doesn't even think about that kind of stuff. I don't have to worry about minimum tournaments and exemptions, all that stuff. That's just...
But it's only 4, isn't it?
He's outside of the
majors. WGC events and the majors. So he played in South Africa at the start of the year, obviously returning a favour to Ernie Els. He's played the Irish Open. He's going to be playing the Dunhill Links Championship and this. And he couldn't find another event somewhere earlier in the year to ensure. Now, I know he missed a bit of time with injury.
Got married.
There always seems to be something with Rory as to why he can't do or turn up somewhere. But as Nathan says, you have your whole year to get your schedule right. And he's had to shoehorn this in at the end.
Yeah,
Regardless of whether or not he rocked up with the Tour Championship, he would have had to play this.
Yeah, I guess in fairness, the injury was slightly unpredictable as the year continued. Yeah, be fair enough to him, but yeah, it doesn't seem like 4 tournaments is that much to fit in. We never, by the way, before we go, we never mentioned Tiger Woods in the vice president's I can't get my terminology for this tournament right at all.
Vice-captaincy of the President's Cup team.
Against the Team World.
Team World.
It's against the Empire. So Tiger obviously is sitting there with all the other vice-captains, and 90%, you watch this press conference, Nathan, 90% of it is obviously about Tiger and about Tiger's own game. Like, even he's on the front page of the Irish Examiner today, so give us a general sense of this press conference.
General sense was, it went on about, well, I looked back at the full thing earlier again, it was about 9 minutes. It felt like it was a lot longer.
Full press conference.
It was only about, and there's 8 of them, 10 of them sitting on stage.
Okay.
Because all of Tiger's answers were 20 seconds long of just prodding him along and probing and going, here, give us a little bit more, trying to say, when are you going to be back? He's like, I've just told you, I'm hitting a few little chip shots, 60 yards. That's all I can do. Nothing else.
Yeah.
I can't give you a time frame. I just don't know. And then we had the clip earlier where, which was literally the very last, I will play the clip actually now.
Yeah. Okay.
Of this is, so it's gone on. The only other real questions that were asked were, like, Tony Johnston must be sitting there going, how am I still sitting at a press conference? Tony Johnston must be heading for 70. And here I am, somehow still relevant, sitting in this press conference with Tiger Woods. And he was trying to defend the international team, Team World.
Yeah.
And say, well, we're from all around the world. It's hard for us to get that bond that the Americans have.
Yeah.
So, again, I was asking Tiger, and he was just, I just don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever my body tells me. One other thing. Look at the video. Tiger Woods, he will put Dave McIntyre to shame.
Oh, he's back in good shape.
He's in too good shape. I thought part of this period of time out and reflection and injury was that maybe he needed a new fitness regime and not bulk up. His arms are massive.
Really?
So he's like, he's actually big again, as opposed to just looking like he's in decent shape and lean and prepared to play, go out and play golf again.
No, he looks probably.
So is he in the gym putting stress on his back all over again?
I just don't know. His arms look. Have a look at the video. His arms are massive.
I think he is genetically gifted and does put on muscle very quickly, more so than other people. I wonder if this is a guy who had the surgery, was out of the game, and who was, I don't want to use the word addicted, but certainly using all manner of prescription drugs. You wonder how well he was eating. You wonder how well he was looking after himself, and so he was letting himself go. Maybe he's just back eating really well, eating cleanly, getting rest, and doing a little bit in the gym. And for someone as gifted as him genetically, that adds up. Now, I hope that's the case. If he is in the gym at 4 a.m. texting Rory and lifting all sorts of weights and bending his back funny again, then he deserves never to play again.
Yeah. So this was literally the very last question of the press conference.
Could you see a scenario where you would not come back competitive golf?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know what my future holds for me. I've told you guys, I'm hitting 60-yard shots.
To be honest, when I was watching it on the bus going home last night in the pissing rain in Dublin, the 16 bus, 100 people on it, squashed in, me trying to watch this.
Yeah.
It didn't strike me as massive news. Like, all right, Tiger's admitting.
Yeah.
I may never play golf again.
Yeah.
Clearly, I've had 8 different surgeries on his back. I sort of presumed we all knew that. But it seems this is the first time he's kind of admitted, yeah, you may never see me on a golf course again.
Next summer is 10 years since the US Open.
He's still won a tournament more recently than Phil Mickelson.
Okay.
He has, the back end of the 2013 season. He went 5 times that season, finished as player of the year.
Yeah, amazing.
I guess he's just putting into words what we all feel, that it's so unlikely that he's ever going to play again. I wonder, why is he hitting 60-yard chip shots? Like, to what end? Just so he can feel what it's like to have a golf club in his hand?
Maybe to see. Maybe he's going to give it one last bash and see what he can do with the new back surgery, which was in April. So maybe it's just right. But this is the last effort.
But if you think, he's already been like 9 months off the golf course.
Yeah,
that's a long, long time. It's a long recovery time. He hasn't played since he was in Dubai in January. And like, how much more time do you need?
God, that was exciting in January when he looked like he might be coming back. Anyway,
yeah, and then as his first errant tee shot, you realise he can't bend down to pick the ball up from the rough.
Yeah,
yeah. Before we leave completely, and before we leave Rory, there was other parts to his press conference.
Oh yeah.
So it was like a lot of Rory's recent press conferences. It was quite strange. He's going into a lot of detail about his sabbatical, his 3-month sabbatical. He's saying maybe Abu Dhabi at the end of January is sort of when he's eyeing up a return. He's talking about playing 29 events next year.
Wow.
Which would be huge, which would be 4 or 5 more. I assume the Ryder Cup is one of those in there as well.
What's 29? So let's call it 30 into 52 weeks. Yikes. Okay. Wow.
Where, again, listening to him over the last few weeks, you sort of would have assumed he'd be streamlining it completely and making sure he doesn't push himself too far.
And it's really not 52 weeks.
No.
I mean, if he's only coming back at the end of January and he's going to be done by the end of November when he leaves Dubai, you're talking 29 events in 42 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, you are shoehorning an awful lot of golf into a very short period of time.
Maybe 3 events a month.
Mm.
Great.
So, clearly, whatever he thinks is going to happen over the next few months is going to change his career completely.
Yeah.
The place is on fire outside, but listen, we're dedicated to this podcast.
There's a fire drill happening.
He did say he won't be lifting a golf club until the end of November.
He was talking about the various things he's going to do, and he's going to look at changing his lifestyle completely.
Okay.
Likes a burger, has a weakness for red wine, dark chocolate, burgers, fries, everything really. I'll be the first one to say my diet probably hasn't been the best this year. Travel a lot, hard to get into routine, eating at restaurants all the time. I'm like a dog. Whatever you put in front of me, it's going to be eaten, whether I want it or not. If it's there, I'm having it. So I probably need to be a bit more disciplined. Talks about being married to a great baker. Says he's had a lifelong interest in food. But he also gets into his
plans. I think that's so true, by the way. I'm just a brief thing. Like, the way to eat healthy is being a routine. I always am amazed. Being at home, in a routine.
If you're on the move, it is virtually impossible to eat properly.
Yeah, going to restaurants, late night flights.
It's very hard when, like, he's eating in good restaurants. True. It's hard not to go, I'll have the healthy option. Like, I know this is going to be good.
Look at the steak on the fries with it.
I would have just thought he was, maybe it is just the last, since he got married and he's been on sort of an extended honeymoon that he's
slipped back into
some sort of routine.
Yeah.
But
because he did say in his last FedEx tournament, he was at the Skycart and they were showing him pictures of him winning the FedEx a year previously, and interestingly the first thing he said was, I was in better shape back then. He's feeling a bit pudgy.
I feel that he's a bit like I was when I returned from my years travelling, and I had all these great plans for when I landed back in Ireland, and this was about 10 years ago, clearly nothing actually happened, but I was going to get my life fully in order and I was going to get into a routine and all these things, because he's talking about his 3 months off, so he's going to do a lot of different stuff. He's going to Manchester next week or after the Dunhill
for Phil Kenyon.
A full health type of thing.
Going to get his blood done. 2 days full of testing, he said.
I'd love to do this.
The full NCT.
Mm.
Blood done.
Some food allergy testing done. Yeah. Just been a couple of things where my joints have been inflamed or haven't had the right energy levels. Just want to use this time to delve deeper, see where I can get better and be more disciplined. So I'll be doing that as well as a rehab program for the next 4 weeks in Dubai.
I'd love to do that. I think we'd all benefit so much from that. Now, having the discipline then to follow the plan would be tricky, but I mean, I've no doubt we're all eating.
But could he not have just got that done last week?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, he certainly...
when you first thought of it.
He's certainly talking about this period as like he's going to emerge a new man.
But that's, as we've said,
a lot of pressure on it.
There's going to be a lot of pressure when he arrives in Abu Dhabi. It's like, just didn't go exactly as I wanted.
There may be something in January that we are only finding out about at that stage. Something that happened over the course of the previous 8 weeks, whether it was a little niggle or changes management again or something that distracted him from the practice that he clearly needs to be doing on a lot of parts of his game.
Yeah. Anything else?
Said he came back too early from injury this year. Shouldn't have played at Erin Hills. Should have waited for the Open.
Fair enough.
I think we all probably knew that at the time. Did you watch the Tour Championship?
I got to see a good bit of it on the final day, yeah.
It was a strange finale.
The NFL was so gripping.
Yeah.
It was hard. You know, like, there was this unfolding, unprecedented political, sporting, historical thing happening, and then the golf was like...
Well, there was also the actual NFL on the field... was bloody brilliant last Sunday as well, which made it difficult.
Yeah, so the rookie won.
Yeah, Xander Schauffele.
And Justin Thomas picked up his $10 million.
Yeah, and that was frustrating because... So it was coming down, like there was a moment, there was about 5 minute spell where it looked as though Spieth and Thomas may have to go into a playoff for the $10 million quid.
Where Spieth holds out from the fairway and you think, oh my God, he's going to... He is just going to do this.
Sort of died a death. Then Spieth missed the birdie putt in 18. Yeah. And Thomas didn't put any pressure. Really seemed happy enough to go, all right, I'll just don't make any mistakes.
Spieth was, I mean, of the 30 in the field, he was outside the top 20 for strokes gained putting. Had one of his worst putting weeks he's ever had.
Yeah, he couldn't get the ball to drop on Sunday. And at least with last year, you had McIlroy, who was leading the money list, and he was leading the charge for the $10 million as well as winning that tournament. So he holds that big putt. He lets out that animalistic roar in the 18th. And he's walking away with both trophies, where you have this unusual feeling. It's like watching, you know, an England team having been hammered by Ireland in the final round of the Six Nations, walking away with the Six Nations trophy, but they've left the Grand Slam behind them.
Yeah.
And
the real winner is Justin Thomas.
Yeah.
Schauffele's walked away with a cool 1.2 million as well, but
and
just doesn't
feel
the same.
And a 2 million bonus on top of that for finishing third in the FedEx.
That's not bad either.
So he gets like 3 million quid. God, they were talking so before it, and I'd say this may definitely come back into the reckoning about possible changes. And they were talking about staging the Tour Championship, handing out a trophy, and then the top FedEx Cup finishers come back the next day over 18 holes to figure out the winner of the FedEx Cup.
Okay.
On a Monday.
Or maybe they started on a Wednesday and it's a 5-day right. event.
The festival. Okay, that's the FedEx Tour. Yeah, it was not as gripping as last year with Rory, inevitably. So we're pretty much done. Team USA versus Team World is the best golf this week. It's what, do you know, in most sporting events, even just whether I want to or not, I'll just pick someone I kind of want to win. I don't really care who wins this. Is the you know, does anyone,
should we not be anti-USA now with Trump?
Anti-USA, and you know, as Europeans, we want the USA to fall apart for the Ryder Cup. But I really don't. If Team World win or if USA win,
there's just too many nice guys in that US
team. Well, that's because you're neither from the USA or Team World.
Technically, I am Team World.
Well, it really the it should say
no,
the
team
international
World don't
team
like you.
Minus Europe.
Well, we should point that out. Team World don't want your support. They've never called on the Europeans to join their side.
Would we ever have a Team Europe versus Team World event then?
We do have another couple of pretty crappy.
Oh, there is that. There is the.
We have Europe against Asia.
Eurasia,
don't we?
Yeah. Eurasia thing.
Whoa.
Eurasia.
Tell you what.
Yeah.
So and love then when we like that. Even then we tried GB and I against Europe with the Seve Trophy and like they were all pretty boring.
It's amazing, really, how well the European or the Ryder Cup really works, you know, considering all
it
the others
the
are so far below
in
it.
Terms of these team events.
Yeah.
Anyway, again, next year, Le Golf National.
Oh, fantastic. So we're done. We'll be back next week and we will talk about the President's Cup and a few other bits and bobs. We'll see you then. Good luck.
Tell all my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle. I'll pick it down. Starter kit right here. Now Mama Lou makes chocolate.